This is Kelly Johnson.
And Taylor Martin, writers of episode 703, Les Fleurs du Mal.
You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
I'm a poet, and I know I won't blow it, because at Les Fleurs du Mal, beating defiance means winner takes all. Fail, however, to succeed, your body will most certainly bleed. Welcome to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
What the hell is all that?
Because this is all about poetry this evening. The guy that wrote Les Fleurs du Mal.
All right. Well, I guess you're going to give us a history lesson. And I'm Agent Peterson. Aaron Peterson. Thank you for joining us once again as we discuss number 150 on The Blacklist this week. How do you say it?
Les Fleurs du Mal,
written by Taylor Martin and Kelly Johnson and directed by Lisa Robinson. Show notes and their intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com or probably at jamesbond.com too.
And you know what? You cannot be James Bond, but you most certainly could be 007.
I agree. I have no problem with a new 007 as long as they're not named James Bond.
That's right. James Bond is the person. 007 is the designation.
I'm glad we clarified that for everybody that wasn't aware.
There's probably a lot of people that aren't. And after tonight, Aram is the only 007 that will ever exist going forward.
At least in The Blacklist, yeah.
It was pretty good. Yeah. We'll cover off on our profiling crusher from last week, if you haven't been with us before. Then we get into our case profile of the episode, and then we'll take some special agent intel from all of you, plus some wise words from Red in Red's rhetoric. But let's just get right into it, shall we, Aaron?
Is the woman we see today on screen the Katerina Rostova? Two-thirds of you say yes. This is the real Katerina Rostova, and one-third of you are apparently psychotic like Troy and say no.
He says that lovingly, of course.
Not really.
Since you believe that this is Katerina Rostova, why don't you take the yeses there, Aaron?
For Team Yes, Team Captain Philip McDermott stated that she literally says the Townsend Directive is my death sentence. It's only a death sentence for Katerina Rostova. The question has already been answered. She's a real woman. It's true.
True. But Team No, Captain Kristen Olwyn says, just to explain my train of thought, I'm totally sure that the talk between Red, Dom, and Mila, or Francesca, or Whiskey 68, was about two different women. First, it's she, and then it's about Katerina. It was so obvious to me. Also, Red's reaction at what Dom said, like, enough already. That convinced me, kind of, that she's not the real one. And Dom, who says, go to hell, but hours earlier says, to protect my own, nope, doesn't add up. So if Katerina is Dom's daughter, then this woman is not Katerina.
Yeah, I'm going to agree to disagree on all of that. So for a few alternative takes, Melissa Edmonds Krupp says, tricky question. Biologically could be the OG, but mentally a different person due to mind control. Or maybe, you know, mind wiping, you know, because Belgrade lost memories. Or maybe something actually happened in Belgrade, which is entirely what was alluded to in the entire episode, over and over and over, that something happened that we don't know about yet that caused this drift that's currently happening. But, you know, hey, let's ignore the obvious because we're stuck on stuff.
Or you tie it directly to Belgrade, which we've last heard in Luther Braxton, which was tied to the memory blocking altering thing that happened to Liz. And Ben Pammon said that he's with the memory blocking altering concept. My guess is that this is the real Katerina, but someone screwed with her mind.
Entirely possible. Now, let me ask you, you're through this episode. Where does anything change? You still believe it's Katerina, I assume?
At this point, I am going to take the side of I'm just going to enjoy the season for what it is, because at this point, it's so confusing.
I don't really know what's so confusing about. Put it this way. If you take yourself out of all the
preconceived notions,
mind numbing of yourself and all of us, like all of our preconceived notions over the years, if you take all of that out of it, it makes total sense that it's just Katerina. Really. Sometimes I think we just overthink it to death as fans, and I still see people arguing about it on the internet. I'm like, I don't know what you're arguing about. I mean, even her conversations, I mean, she's alluding to it constantly. They've made much mention to it. I just don't really. I mean, even the showrunners reference her as Katerina in the interviews. There's no dancing around it. They always dance if it's not exactly, you know, who or what they say is going on. You know, they always dance around it. They're not point blank about names, and they have named her as Katerina and said Katerina Rostova. Like, how many imposters do we need in one show, really? That would just be borderline ridiculous. But hey, you never know. You never know.
Because you get to an episode like tonight, and you go, maybe it's just a wolf in grandma's clothing.
I think that's more philosophical than it is literal. Unfortunately, people are going to want to take it literal if they have a preconceived notion. If you don't have a preconceived notion, it's very much like Alias, where mom's a little bit more dangerous than the loving one. We've only seen the loving one in flashbacks. We haven't seen what happened that transformed her.
That's a good take on it. I like that take, actually. You said Alias, not me, for the record.
True story. All right, next week's profiling question. Should we trust Francesca? Should we trust Frankie? I love her, by the way. I'm so glad she's on the show.
Ding dong ditch. That was amazing. Jumping out of the pool. Like, she could be on every week. That was a fun segment. I loved it.
That was a Mel Gibson move right there, man.
It was great. Thanks to all that answered the profiling question this week. Now, before our podcast gets banned for nearly a century, let's dig into this week's case profile.
So we started this episode with Fight Club or Bomb Club or something. I mean, that dude blew up. That was fantastic. I honestly think it might be my favorite opening in quite some time.
I concur. And you were like, the opening was awesome. And I'm like, can I just watch it for myself? Stop spoiling the show.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't tell you what happened.
You didn't tell me what happened, but it was like, it was awesome! With multiple exclamation points.
And I love when they used cliches against us. The whole time that scene's going on, I'm like, well, he's going to stop at the last minute, and they're probably just going to kill the guy anyway. Because I just felt like what you see on TV. And then he blew up, and you don't see that on TV. Except, you know, when Alan Alda's in there. And, yeah. So, it was intense.
Yeah, I thought I was done with my body counts of people blowing up after watching The Boys this summer. Apparently not.
It was pretty impressive that they actually had that on network TV.
I was like, yeah, 8 o'clock on NBC. Good for you, NBC. Good for you.
But they did. They blew up Alan Alda before like that.
When they in Luli in the box.
Yeah.
But that was back in season one when it was on at 9, 10
and you
o'clock.
Know what? I honestly don't think they actually showed the poof. You know, it was more of a... You just see some splatter as Red's looking into the box or something like that.
It don't matter. You saw a little bit of a wash and you heard a little... And it was like, oh, that was awesome.
I loved it. I was actually cheering in my house, which is a sad thing, but I cheered twice during this episode. I don't cheer out loud.
You're one of those people that's watching for the thrill of it.
I definitely was this week. There's two scenes where I audibly cheered, and this is one of them, which is sad because I probably shouldn't cheer at this poor man's unfortunate demise. But if I was filthy rich, I might try this. It seems like a fun thing to do.
So now we have to play the guessing game of what was the second scene that Aaron cheered at.
You'll find out when we get there. I'm not going to do it right now.
I'm going to guess.
Okay, go for it.
I'm going to say it's the point where Aram moves in on the married woman and smooches her.
No, I didn't cheer. And actually, I love the moment, have a problem with the choice.
We'll talk about that.
That's not the moment I cheered for, though.
Okay.
But I really like the actress. I enjoyed the character and the actress, so I kind of want her to stick around, even if I don't necessarily align with the choice.
There's a budget. There's a budget, Aaron.
No. The character choice. Character choice.
Yeah, I know. But yeah. I'm saying, can all the characters that are joining the team this year can all stay around, okay?
Yeah, they can. Sure. Maybe. I mean, they'll have to die violently at some point, I suppose, but don't get in the box. I mean, everybody that gets in a box seems to blow up. That seems like a bad plan. Don't do that. All right. So basically, this episode is about a secret society that are thrill seekers. They have everything. So nothing is special to them. Le fleur de mal. And basically, the rich people playing Saw. That's what they're doing. They're putting other people into games where they have to fight to stay alive, and there's a very thin chance they can survive. They have to figure out how to solve a puzzle inside this box or they die.
And I thought it was a really fantastic concept, to be quite honest.
I loved it because this is basically like Fight Club with Saw taken up a notch, and I love that idea.
And it came from Kelly and Taylor.
Yeah, I don't want to hang out with you guys at the weekends. Just letting you know because I'm a little frightened of you.
I mean, Kelly had that one episode last year. Taylor had the caterpillar butterfly lady. It's like, man, these two, I tell ya. Whew.
Definitely. So I want to say so far the season is spot on. I've really been enjoying it. Last two were kind of mythology heavy. This has a little mythology in it, but this was a fun, go have fun. We're going to have a crazy Blacklister scenario, and we're just going to have a great time episode.
And we called it last week. We said Aram was kind of backdoor last week, and we're like, hey, look, there's Aram front and center.
Well, you probably watched some preview or something.
I do not watch previews.
You read stuff. Come on. You knew.
All I knew was the title of the Blacklister. That's all I knew.
Yeah, you probably did some digging. All right. Felonious Prackett is the key. The Defiance is an experience for rich psychos. And ultimately, the crux of the episode is Aram goes and thwarts the Defiance, that little game, and captures the Ringmaster. They question about Lewis Steinhill, which leads to Lewis Steinhill getting killed. Now, we're going to break it down by character, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit more. But side note, tell us about Les Fleurs du Mal.
Yeah, it translates to The Flowers of Evil, and it's a volume of French poetry written by Charles Baudelaire, or Baudelaire. I can't do my French tonight, but I believe it's Baudelaire. And the poem themes deal with decadence and eroticism. And clearly, since it's broadcast TV, practice and standards and all that fun stuff, we just got the decadence side of this equation, not the erotic part.
Well, we got the erotic by Red's book reading earlier.
That's true.
In the episode. So
we're going to hear the whole poem later.
We are?
We are.
Are you going to recite it to us? Because I'm going to tune out.
I found the poem.
I will tune out while you do that because I don't want you getting all eroticized. Let's hop into characters and hit the music right off the bat.
As we get the rundown on the plan and Aram and his date arrive at the party, we hear a backing track from Cult 22. Then as they arrive at the party, we hear the American, the string quartet number 12 in F major. Down in Miami, we get the sweet notes of the Jimmy Antley sound. And then at the end of the episode this week, we hear Running with the Wolves, poignantly chosen, of course, because of Red Riding Hood, by Aurora. And you can find those on the playlist, both on Spotify and Apple Music, via the links on the website over at theblacklistexposed.com.
All right, let's get into the main characters here. This is interesting. You know, it wasn't a mythology-heavy episode, and there were a lot of characters that didn't really get a whole lot of screen time, so we'll touch on them real quick. Wrestler didn't really do anything this episode, but he had a great line. Lethal Injection will give you a chance to feel alive before you die. That was about the Wrestler contribution this week.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what he's thinking in that moment. He's like, I love the good cop, bad cop between him and Liz in that scene as far as, well, you know, we're talking to your buddies. He knows they're not talking to his buddies. But whole like pressuring them to say, hey, we would have let you go if you just would give us a little bit of info. But I know, Lethal Injection, man. Good stuff.
I love that line. Once again, we're getting, you know, what's the downside to having all these cool characters that we're enjoying is once again, Wrestler gets the backdrop.
Wah, wah, wah.
Every year it happens. Poor Diego. Well, Cooper, how's Agnes? He asked the question we're all wanting to know because, you know, she's not really around a whole lot, which is good and bad, right?
Getting as many lines as Wrestler.
Yeah, pretty much. But we did find out because of his conversation with Liz that there are guards outside of his building.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently none of them have been trained to look for a woman that looks like Katerina Rostova.
No, nobody knows what Katerina Rostova looks like.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's true. Including fans, it seems like. So, one question I have is Red definitely knows what she looks like. And he often shows up at Liz's apartment, and he's always got people like keeping an eye on Liz. Is that going to pay off at some point? Or do you feel like he just hasn't had anybody on her for a while?
Or he doesn't know that. Maybe he hasn't. I think that maybe he hasn't had anybody on her because I want to say he said something at the end of last season when Agnes came home that it was fine. And then he would kind of back off a little bit. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, but he knows that everything's not fine. So why wouldn't he have somebody on Liz? And why hasn't he showed up at her apartment? He always pops up at her apartment. Now, all of a sudden, he's not stopping by.
He's too busy finding Townsend directive people. And
true, he has gone off and doing things, but usually he has people assigned to her. So, I don't know. That's just something keep in your mind.
Maybe Francesca moves in down the hall next, and it's like a whole like college dorm situation.
It's like Full House going on.
Right.
All right. Cooper does tell Aram near the end, which is an interesting conversation where he kind of admires people who allow themselves to feel exhilarated. Did you co-sign to this moment, or was that weird for you?
It was a little bit weird because Cooper, he's an interesting one sometimes. He bounces all over the place depending on if he's going to abide by the law or not abide by the law. And now he's kind of this, you know, kind of straight and narrow when he's with Charlene, but then he's a little bit more reckless now that he's not with Charlene. So maybe he's just got something going on in his life that he feels like he can't enjoy the exhilaration or the finer things in life because he's got a heavy heart. Maybe the heavy heart is the fact that he has to work with this supposed Russian spy in his mix and he can't let his guard down because of that. And so he's like saying, hey, I appreciate that you can do that for the team and it, you know, do it while you can.
Yeah.
That's the most I could come up with out of it. It was a weird line. It was just kind of thrown around. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little odd. All right, Dembe doesn't do much this week. He just counsels Red. So thank you for doing that, Dembe. We appreciate it. We can move on to Frankie, who is basically being held hostage, and it sounds like she's married. Does it? No. Come back to that. She's willing to get this photograph to pay her debt. And I do. What did you think about her Ocean's 11 style heist in the hotel? Because I was a big fan of this and how she got the picture and she did the ding and ditch or whatever.
The one thing that was interesting was the concept.
Ding dong ditch.
That's ding dong ditch.
Yeah.
The one thing that was interesting was before she jumps out, she like has the whole plan. Specifically knows exactly where Red should meet her.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's done this before.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely done this before.
So I thought that was an interesting pickup. So it'll be really, really interesting to see what she does going forward with being in Red's employ.
I love that she did a whole Lethal Weapon 2 jump out that window. Because that was great. Loved the forward thinking to put her phone into a plastic bag before she jumped in the water. Just let her know, Frankie, if you want to get a Pixel 2 or 3, those are waterproof. You don't have to put them in bags. Just a heads up. Save yourself some trouble. But that was a fun moment, and it was fun to see her kind of come around to Red. Because as she gets in the car and she gives him everything, she gives him the picture of Rostov and... Is that his name? Rostov? Rostov?
I didn't really pick up on
it's
it.
Like
it
was everybody kinda... who's Russian?
Yeah, exactly.
That's her name. And FBI agent Fields in the hotel. She smiles once Red gives her approval. She gives this little sly smile like she's kind of enjoying this. You know, it's not as bad as she thought it was going to be. And she has a little twinkle in her eye. You agree with that?
Yeah, and that's why I don't think we can trust her.
I trust her. She's great.
Which is great, I don't know if Red should trust her. I'm sure she's working for somebody.
I mean, NSA? He's just as shady as she is, so...
CIA?
Mm.
A plant?
No, I don't think she's a plant.
I don't think she's working for Katarina, but maybe she's like for the Cabal or maybe for the Townsend Directive.
If there's a long con, she could still be working for Katarina.
It could be.
It could be like a real long con. If you think about it. You pretend to turn, and you pretend to turn back, and then if you guys get away, you're still there. You're still involved. You're still part of the plan.
It's very possible.
Not too bad. We do find out she's not married. What do you make of that? What do you make of the whole selling it like she has an anniversary to get to, but then she ultimately isn't even married?
I like the fact that Red kind of caught her in it, using Glenn at the DMV as the ability to... track her down and see what was going on. So I thought that was really cool.
Do you have a theory on this woman yet?
I want to trust her because I like her, but at the same time, I can't trust her any further than I can throw her. And apparently she can throw very far because she can jump from a window into a pool and clear the concrete.
And just so you know, those are two different athletic elements, but I still trust her, but I do have something in the back of my head telling me she might still be working for Katarina. It's still possible. Still possible. Because it could be a long game.
I think she works for somebody else.
Really? Another party? Like another big bad kind of thing?
Not like a big bad, but just someone that was planted to keep an eye on him.
I guess anything's possible at this point. We don't know what the hell's going on, right?
Hell no.
just still fishing.
But we're liking still it so far.
I like it. Man, I really dug this episode. This is my favorite in a while, I'm telling you. Like, legitimately. Usually when I'm, you know, because you watch them twice. When we do the podcast, you watch the episode twice. And usually when I'm rewatching it, it's just for homework. It's just more like to make sure I don't miss any little detail or whatever. I was engrossed both times. I just was really more watching the show. Normally, I take a lot more notes, so I have a lot more detail. But I was really just watching the show and kind of got sucked into it quite a bit.
I kept looking at the guy that was running the Defiance and the whole Fleur de Mal party going, man, he looks like Ed Norton. A lot, you know, if he was like yeah. longer hair, like he totally looks like Ed Norton, because I'm like, this is a Fight Club vibe. And
oh, that would take me out of it, because Ed Norton's so overrated.
But it kind of looked like him at like a couple angles. I was like, it looks like him a little bit.
Yeah, it does look like him a little bit. I could see that. An older, more, maybe this is what happened to him after Fight Club.
Maybe.
You know, he ended up, you know, after all the anarchy, he got rich and started the Rich Fight Club. Like, really rich Fight Club. I guess Fight Club was already for rich, a lot of rich people, but Rich Fight Club.
We've talked about it way too much.
I know. Well, we're not supposed to say a word. All right, Liz, we're going to talk about her with some other character moments, because most of her character moments came with other characters. But she is addressed quite a bit when Katerina is speaking. So when Katerina is speaking about her daughter and whatnot. And I want to talk about this dynamic between her and Katerina.
The first time or the second time?
Kind of both. I mean, you know, the second time we'll tackle the nursery rhyme thing when we get to Katerina. But I just mean in terms of, you know, as these two actresses are sitting together, I really got a maternal vibe both times. Like, it just really felt like a warm vibe. I mean, it really just, I really, really, really think they sold Katerina at the very end of the episode, but that's when we get to Katerina. And we always like to refer to him by their character names.
Yeah, and I didn't get the maternal vibe out of it.
I
got more of the longing for something that's been missing for a long time. Like, I'm longing for my mother, or I'm longing for my daughter, but not necessarily a warm and fuzzy maternal feeling.
Okay.
Grandma feeling I was feeling, but...
I got both of those. I mean, it felt painfully obvious that she really... And I mean, there's so many conversations to allude to it that she's hoping that she can, you know, recover that relationship and repair it. And, you know, that she's starting to believe that maybe there's a possibility. And there had to be something really big that happened. And I just want to point out, they haven't told us what that could be yet. So before you're ruling her out as a fake arena, which I know a lot of people have, and they're not even... The reason why I bring that up, my problem with automatically ruling out that this isn't Katerina, because some people are automatically ruling it out, can't be Katerina. By doing that, in my opinion, just my opinion, you are missing some really good character moments between her and Liz. At least this episode. I felt like there were some really good character moments that were important and really only work if you believe it's Katerina.
See, I would agree with you on the character moments, but I would say, even if it's not Katerina, you're missing out on a really great villain who's playing a part so well that it has you so fooled that it is Katerina, and that Liz could be buying into, like, oh, this would be nice if she was my mother too. And I think just that's what I love about the show, right? Because I want nothing more than just to enjoy this season. Sit back, enjoy what I'm being shown, and just go for the ride, and then be like completely amazed, right? Because I think for so long we've been, oh, he's an imposter. We got that one right, right? There's no way that the blood on the shirt could belong to Raymond Reddington. It could be anybody's blood, and it's 30 years old. And we were right on that one too. And it's like, for once, I just want to be shocked, like just shocked, and like have not figured it out ahead of time. And at this point, that's where I feel right now. I feel like I could go either way, and I love it. And that's what keeps me engaged in watching every single week.
Hey, that's cool too. As long as you're, you know, just be open. Just be open so you can enjoy those moments if the way it plays out. In terms of Katerina, she's a really nosy neighbor. She likes to put bugs in people's houses.
make copies of their keys.
In the guise of princesses and make copies of their key. She moved here to be closer to my daughter. I moved here to be closer to my daughter. We're estranged, but I'm hoping to get closer to her. I miss having children. Now, that's a line. Hang on. I miss having children is a line that people are going to go nuts over. And I know it's going to be quoted at me left and right. So I'm going to clear this up right now. Does it bother me? Nope. I miss having children to me just means I miss having a little child. I've literally said this out loud myself. It doesn't necessarily mean I miss having, because I have two kids, I miss having two children. It means I miss having little ones. That's to me what it means because I've said it myself. That doesn't do anything. So please, as you dispel whatever your belief is at me on the Facebooks and the Twitters, just know I don't interpret it to that to mean that, well, she's obviously not Liz's mom because there's children and that means plural. I don't take it that way at all. Troy, you have the floor.
Well, I just thought it was funny that it was plural because that's the first thing I said is like, did she say children? Oh my gosh, you're going to tag Aaron like every single day. I pay a dollar for every tag that Aaron gets on Facebook. Because it wasn't even that I was like looking for like something to prove that it's one way. I was just like, it's plural. Someone's going to hang on that for sure. I can't wait for the comments.
I'm sure it's going to happen. I have no doubt. As we record this, somebody's already tagged me in it. But I don't take it that way. I take it to mean she misses having a little one around. That's it.
And we'll find out. And we don't know if she had other children.
That's true. I mean, there could be a whole lot of stuff we don't know.
Yep.
She might. You might. Fairy tales are very important. They help you cope with different things. Loss, especially. What about this line? That's an interesting dynamic because it kind of paints a picture that maybe some of the things that Liz knows or thinks about her mom are not quite accurate.
I always thought fairy tales, though, were to teach you a lesson. Like, Grimm's fairy tales are grim for a reason. They're supposed to teach you, like, thematic things and what you should or shouldn't do. I don't know if it helps you cope with trauma and loss. Rocky and Bullwinkle helps me cope with trauma and loss.
Everybody's different, Troy.
Everybody's got a different way to do fairy tales. Watched a lot of those over the years.
Yeah. I didn't quite understand that aspect of, or that, how she visualized it, I guess. But I get where she was coming from. And they are there. I mean, fairy tale stories, they're meant to take you into a different world. And I think that's kind of where she was going with it. Like, fairy tales are meant to take you and catapult you to a different world, a different universe, take you out of the mindset that you're in, help you separate yourself from grief and, you know, trauma of certain things.
Well, one thing I could think about that would fit for that would be, maybe it's like a statement because she's the one that took her. Well, she didn't take her. She told Kaplan to take her to Sam's house. Mm-hmm. But maybe the fairy tale of reuniting with your mother is enough to get over the trauma and loss, the fact that you lost your mother so many years ago. So that hope of reunification is what helps you get over the trauma of it all.
Hey, quite possible. You know what doesn't help? Bugging your daughter's apartment. I don't think that's going to help anybody cope with anything. She swapped out a princess for another doll.
Why does she pick the hardest doll to recreate?
Why is it the hardest doll?
Because it was like the most hairdo and had the fanciest dress. It was like to like recreate that doll specifically so Liz wouldn't have picked up on it as a profiling agent.
Maybe she just went down to the store and bought the same doll. I think you're overthinking it. It's not like they were handmade. They're just dolls, man.
Could be straight out of the box.
I don't know. I watched Child's Play. That doll was ugly as hell, and they had 100,000 of them. So I think you could find this doll, no problem. And you stick a camera in its eye or a bug in its lapel or something. Done. And she uses that to find Steinhill, a.k.a. the illusionist, before Red.
That was awesome.
It was great because she makes sure Red knows she's better and leaves him a little note. And I thought that was a fantastic touch. You're good. I'm better. And I just laughed out loud.
I also loved how she signed it with the letter K, kind of like the K on the tree back at Tanzany Farms where the bones are buried.
Yeah. K, as in, what's that? What could the K stand for?
Cool.
Kyle? Kevin? Katarina, probably, right? It's possible.
Koslov? Ilya Koslov.
Nice. Well played. Well played. I respect that.
It's a double switch. That. Oh, well.
I respect that. No, stop it. Stop it. And so the illusionist is dead, by the way. I was really kind of hoping he'd come back, but he's not coming back.
I did too. I thought he was fun. He was good.
You can't keep faking it at death. I mean, that seems like nope. Pretty dead.
Pretty dead.
Which is sad. She's fine. All right.
He is not really dead. He is mostly dead.
Yeah, he's mostly dead. She reads Agnes's story, Little Red Riding Hood, and it focuses on the wolf playing the part of grandma.
Yeah, and I think this
what do you want to add to that?
This was a big thing here that's probably going to divide the theory camps again, because you can get the whole, well, it's grandma, so it is Katerina. Or you can say, no, it's a wolf dressed like grandma, so it's a predator, and we should be scared of her, and we shouldn't get it close to her. Or it could be, it is Katerina, but she's a completely different person now because of all the things that she's been through over the last 30 years. There's just a lot to play with.
That's kind of what I got story. Out of it. But what you're going to do is you're going to take whatever you believe out of that.
Preconceived and apply.
I'm taking the entire episode, and she makes too many mentions of daughter and granddaughter and getting close and making amends and everything else. To me, this is Katerina, and I'm really tired of having the debate. Until I hear something that like proves otherwise or leads to something else, I'm really just going to kind of accept it and move on.
I sure hope they find that other child.
I hate you. I hate you. I hate you with a passion. I hate you. All right, so how did it happen? All that matters now is I want to make amends. So how did it happen that her mother and that she separated from her child? All that matters now is I want to make amends. For a long time, I didn't think that would ever happen. Now I'm beginning to think it will. And then that's her conversation with Liz, which is all an allegory to what's going on in the moment and her with her daughter and granddaughter in this room, even though they don't know it's her. They don't know it's Katerina. When she walks out and she closes the door and she has that just...
The pause.
That pause, that emotional pause as she leans against the door and almost, you know, has a moment. I don't know how you see that any other way, but my God, I'm so close to my child right now. I just, like, everything about that moment read the opposite of what people thought the moment last week meant.
And I literally said, I turned to the wife as we were watching this. I said, okay, she's closing the door. Pay real close attention to the next 3 seconds. Because however her face looks should really give you an inkling of how she really feels about the situation she was just in. And I think I was literally waiting for her to turn around and do like a little, I was like, you know, snively whiplash smiles. And okay. She didn't. So that makes me believe she's Katerina again. So I don't want to guess anymore. I just want to enjoy the season.
I want to know what an inkling is. Is that like an inkling?
Yeah.
Or is that...
Like you have spidey senses. There, I'll talk your language.
Okay. Well, you said inkling, and yeah. I'm just like, well, what's an inkling?
I can't.
I can't either, man. And so it's really shameful that I'm making fun of somebody else when I can't speak half the time. But it was funny. It made me laugh. What are you going to do? So I love that moment at the door. That, to me, told me everything I needed to do. I need to pay attention because this is a family dynamic that's shaping up, and we need to figure out where it's going. The questions that I have that I want answered are, what happened in Belgrade? What happened in Kuwait? Why and how does this Red know the answer to Cooper's question so well? Because that's a hell of a random question, and he just knew the answer last week. So I'm kind of, those are some questions last week or the week before, whichever that was.
How did he know where the tape was for Minister D? How did he know about the plan?
So many questions I have that I need real answers to, which we'll get to, you know, at some point. But this is, I will tell you, 3 episodes in, this is the first time in a couple years. Yeah, probably a couple years where I haven't been frustrated with Liz not asking questions, with characters doing things that are out of character, except for what I'm going to talk about in a second. Well, no, because it's more like a morality thing. It's not really like an out of...
Right.
Yeah, I'll get there. Just overall, like this is the best 3 episodes, like the start of the season I think we've had in a while. For me personally, a couple of years, two, three years.
Yeah, I mean, season 5 was fun to start out the season, but yet I think, yeah, since season 3, this is kind of the best out of the gate since season 3, probably.
Yeah, because last year we had the Red going to jail thing. The first 2 episodes were great, and then we had the 3rd episode, and I just felt like that's when we realized, well, they're not really doing anything. Liz and her sister weren't doing anything to get anywhere. And so that became like the beginning of a frustrating moment, I think, for fans. And here it just felt like this is a direct continuation. The story's moving forward. We have an added element that is really getting emotions going. I think Layla, is it Layla Robbins?
Mm-hmm.
She's doing much, I'll be perfectly honest, much better than I expected. Now, granted, she only had a couple seconds last year. Wasn't fair to judge somebody on a couple seconds. But I was like, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work for Katerina Rostova. So far, I haven't been anything but impressed. She's done a great job.
Let me tell you, I almost thought about grabbing two clips from her this week for Red's Rhetoric instead of Red, because Red really didn't say much this week.
That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you could still call it Red's Rhetoric, and some people would be on board.
What?
You're welcome. Ba-da-bop, that's for you. All right, now we go to Aram, because Aram was the James Bond of this episode. He's devastated because of Samara, but he's ready to get back in the field. Oh, is he ready to get back in the field? Quote, unquote.
I don't think he was ready to get back in the field.
Oh, he was ready.
No,
I don't know if you're paying attention, but at the end, he was all but ready.
He wasn't ready.
With the handicapped husband in the house, apparently, he was ready.
He was not ready at the start of the episode.
No,
she kissed,
warmed up.
She kissed him first.
Sure
Let's
did.
Let's be clear. So whoever's cheating here is more on her than on him. And it was Cooper's talk that said, okay, it's okay for me to get out and start being a player again.
I get that. I'm coming back to that. We're building to that moment. So hold your thoughts on that. The end of the episode. Partners up with the wife of this destroyed and handicapped husband. And he's a player, man. He's James Bond. He gets his tracking device. It's part of her necklace. It's reassembled once he's there. They have this whole moment where they're going through, and he's does a wonderful job of convincing everybody he's someone else. So his FBI training has definitely paid off. He's a crack shot, by the way, if I haven't mentioned that. He's a crack shot later in the episode.
Which is a huge jump from season one, when he like never shot a gun before at all.
Exactly. Right.
Great character growth.
I loved the moment where he's selling himself to old Ed Norton, and he's just selling himself, man. He's just knocking it out. Like, he's a completely different guy. He's smooth. He's cocky. He's confident. It's a different character completely. And give props to Amir, because, I mean, you're basically playing a different character. And a lot of times it's just different dialogue. He played a totally different character. I respect it. Great job. That was a lot of fun. And when we get to, did you like that scene? I'm sorry.
Keep
rambling.
What was his name? Shamil?
Yeah.
Shamazel? Hassan Pfeffer Incorporated?
I was going to say it too. Glad I'm not alone.
And like I said, at the minute it came up, I mean, technically it's Shlubmiel with S-C-H-I-L, but I was just like, he said Shamil. I was like, Shamazel, Hassan Pfeffer Incorporated. And my wife is like, you're so from Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is true, because I am.
Yeah, that was great. And then I do want to say they got to the end of the episode. He disrupts this jammer. He figures out that there's a jammer, and he disrupts it pretty easily by flipping the breakers. I would think that they would have the breakers hidden in a high-tech facility like that, but hey, you know, rich people, they don't think of the easy stuff. Who knows?
I just want to know if the people that Katerina hired to man the video cameras are the same people that work for this guy, because the feed goes out. You think someone comes out in the hallway and checks on something.
I know they do where, everywhere I've ever been where there's technical support. What are you going to do? No. How do we get the power on? Let's all stay in the same room and just look at each other bewilderingly.
How does
what about
Aram
you?
Get
Jim, Steve, what? Oh, it came back on. We're good.
How does Aram get back into the party without walking past the security door a second time?
I don't know. Sometimes you just got to swallow things, man, and you got to enjoy the fun of it. So good luck. Everybody tell me good luck. Would maybe run the hell out of that building. I'm just letting you know. I thought it was
cool that they did the bingo ball selection thing, because when the braces lit up right away.
You thought it was going to be a ROM, right?
I thought it was going to be a ROM right away.
Yeah.
The minute the braces lit up. But no, it ended up being her.
And I will give the writers credit for that wonderful play on expectations at the beginning. Because as soon as he's talking to the guy who set up the Defiance, and he says, well, the only way you can escape is if the guy is willing to break a thumb or dislocate a thumb and break a forefinger or whatever it was. That's the only way he can escape. It, immediately, as soon as this moment started, I'm like, oh, okay, so Rom's going to be in there, but he's going to be willing to do that because he'll do anything to survive because he's a smart guy and he just, you know, he thinks about the long term versus the short term.
And when they did the flashback,
completely against expectations with that.
Yeah, when they did the flashback, I was trying to like, did Samar break her thumb to get that cage open? And that's how he was going to remember how to break the thumb and then give her the answer. But unfortunately, no, it was just him being in a moment.
No, see, I love moments like that. And I know it's silly because some people feel like if you tease a moment like that, if you give an indication of how something should go, it should pay off. And I don't always like that. I really like, because that's playing with expectations. And that's how it felt like to me, is we're going to set it up so you think you know what's going to happen, but we're going to go a different way. And I love that because I 100% assumed everything that was going to happen and it went the other way.
It's great.
That said, I'll come. Hang on. That said. He has to watch his, is it Elodie? How do you say her name?
I didn't catch her name at all.
Well, he has to watch his Elodie Radcliffe, reminds him of Samar as she's drowning, and then Aram saves her. Now, this is where I say, but. Because Aram is a badass. Like, this is a great scene to show off Amir. He's a crack shot. Like I said, it's the best action scene I've seen in the show in a while. Honestly, legit. One of the best scenes of the show, action-wise, I thought. You?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was trying to figure out how did he case the room to know exactly who to shoot? That was kind of the big thing. I was like, how did he know who to pick off?
Training, man. That's pretty amazing. Planning the whole time. How does James Bond, how does Jason Bourne, how do they always know who to go after? They just know.
Bauer just shouts at him.
And here, yeah. Get him, damn it! But, there's my butt that I've been holding up.
Chucking the gun thing.
How do bullets not break the glass, but throwing the gun does? I don't understand. I rewatched it a couple times, and I'll be first to tell you, I don't care because it was a badass moment. But if you look at it critically, how do the bullets not break and shatter the glass? But then he picks up the. It was just a really funny thing, and maybe they meant it to be funny. I don't know because I thought it was really funny, still really cool, in a ridiculous kind of way.
Well, see, the bullets reduce the tensile strength, and then the pressure of the balls on the inside, and then when the gun hits it, it causes the chain reaction to actually happen.
That's one of those where it makes no damn sense, and I don't care because that was a fantastic moment, and I loved every second of it. But I'd be lying if I wasn't saying, okay, that's ridiculous, but it's bad. It's kind of like watching a Michael Bay movie. Where everything in the action scenes are just like, that was ridiculous, but I loved it. That was what that moment was.
Yeah, like trying to land a giant spaceship on an asteroid and just having it slide across and still be able to take off again.
Exactly.
Like, love it. Dumb, but love it.
Exactly. So it's one of those moments. Oh, now I'm thinking about poor Harry Stamper. Son of a bitch. All right. Well, anyway, doesn't matter. He's a badass and a player. So are you surprised? Now, here's where I have my moral dilemma, my out of character moment. The only problem I have with him going back and making out with Mrs. Radcliffe is that Aram has been and proven to be the most moralistic character on the show. Would you agree?
Agree.
To me, as much as I liked them together, and I really did, like, I really liked her a lot. You basically got two new characters I love, and I'm like, well, I'm sorry, wrestler. We're just going to have to do what we got to do because I'm having fun with these guys. Him going back to a woman who's married to a man who is handicapped and Aram willing, even if he's for an adrenaline, to have an affair with a married woman who's got a handicapped husband just seems out of character to me, based on everything I've seen, even with him being sad because Samar left him. How do you stand on that? I just stayed on my piece. That's how I feel about it.
I feel kind of the same way, but at the same time, I'm going back to when he had the adrenaline rush and steals the money from Red. And it's like, I'm going to go find my girlfriend no matter what. This is kind of the same thing here where he's got that adrenaline rush. And maybe because he's not new to field agency work, but this is pretty intense. That maybe there's just a level of adrenaline in him that you just takes over and you throw caution to the wind and you put your, you know, morals and guidelines aside because you're just so pumped with adrenaline in that moment. Plus, he knows that it was pretty much a sure thing because she kissed him. So
Well, it's just she's got a handicapped husband.
She literally said he's like non-existent. He's not there at all.
Aram's just never been. Now, the only thing I can say is maybe this is a turning point for Aram. Like he's tired of playing the nice guy. He's tired of being a good guy. He just wants to live. He wants to get out there and experience life. If you're going that way with the character, okay. All right. But if next week we go back to Aram being the same Aram,
then we have a problem.
I have a problem with it because it's not the character I've seen to this point. That's my only thing. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, obviously, in the next coming week. So maybe that's what it is. This is painting the turn of a character. Like, she was nowadays. So she let him down a dark path and where he wanted to experience this. And then he'll come back at the end and realize that he's a better guy than this.
You have to cross this with his different arc moments in each season, right? So you have the whole, trace the bank account number before I finish assembling the gun in season one. And then you have the whole Liz and the box and the director in season three. And then you have the whole shooting the rail gun to kill the guy. And he ends up killing the guy when he wasn't able to push the button to take down the chopper in season four. So maybe that was five. I forget. But in each of those moments, how does Aram react post those events? And does he react in those events in a way that increases in volume or bravada as we go along? And if that's the case, then this is a trajectory path that makes sense. But you can't come back on the downslope on the other side unless Samar comes back into his life. There's a 180 that'll cause the catalyst to happen and makes the switch plausible. But if there's no catalyst, you can't go back to what you were before. Otherwise, it's a disservice to the
character. Yeah. So I'll be curious what happens in the coming weeks. I really like Mrs. Radcliffe. I just have a hard time with him doing that. It just feels like so out of character. That's not going to bother me so much, but I just, handicapped husband.
I think that says more about her than it does about him, though.
No. Because this is all about, it's not about her. It's about him. It's completely out of character for him as a character. That I've seen so far. Now, is it fair to? It's not really fair of me to judge when I haven't seen the upcoming episodes. It definitely could be just like a pendulum swing of the character. He's just going through a dark time. That's very possible. Either way, Aram was great in this episode. I loved him in this episode. He's a lot of fun. I got a feeling though that's gonna take some fans for a loop a little bit.
I can see that.
It's my gut feeling. Because it did me. I actually went, ooh, I don't know how that's going to play. I don't know. I could tell you, my wife loves Amir. She didn't like it. She didn't like it one bit.
She was probably thinking the same thing my wife was thinking.
What's that?
She's just like, that's supposed to be me.
That's very possible. Yeah, that's actually
probably that's why they didn't like it.
That's probably what happened. Red, he reads from Baudelaire. Himself, the inspiration for this episode, Les Fleurs du Mal. The full passage Red was reading is as follows, translated into English, of course. Troy, let's see if you can earn your snaps tonight.
All right, here we go. The passage in Les Fleurs du Mal is called To One Who Is Too Gay. Your head, your bearing, your gestures are fair as a fair countryside. Laughter plays on your face like a cool wind in a clear sky. The gloomy passerby you meet is dazzled by the glow of health, which radiates resplendently from your arms and shoulders. The touches of sonorous color that you scatter on your dresses cast into the minds of poets the image of a flower dance. Those crazy frocks are the emblem of your multicolored nature. Mad woman whom I'm mad about, I hate and love you equally. At times in a lovely garden where I dragged my atony, I have felt the sun tear my breast as though it were in mockery. Both the springtime and its verdure so mortified my heart that I punished a flower for the insolence of nature. Thus I should like some night, when the hour for pleasure sounds, to creep softly like a coward toward the treasures of your body, to whip your joyous flesh and bruise your pardoned breast, to make in your astonished flank a wide and gaping wound, an intoxicating sweetness through those new lips, more bright, more beautiful, to infuse my venom, my sister.
Ow, my sister, huh? That's all I heard.
I heard the there was the one line in there, the mad woman who I'm mad about, I hate and love you equally. That was interesting.
It's all interesting. Gaming's happy, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, today, a lot of people don't know that. It's been so associated with homosexuality for so long that sometimes people forget it actually also means happy. So just clarifying. So what'd you think about that poem?
I thought it was interesting. The fact that he's so in love with a person, yet at the same time invokes such violence in the moment that it literally speaks to the whole relationship that we're seeing between Katarina and Red. Mm-hmm. You know, that they've had this, you know, they had this, you know, passion or whatever it would be, at least Katarina and the real Raymond Reddington, and maybe even Ilya, in a way that Ilya loved Katarina so much, yet she wouldn't return the favor, that it's just driven him to do mad things in order to get at her. So if we're seeing what's on the screen and we believe Dom's story, you could take the poem to mean, well, she is Katarina in the flesh, he is Ilya, and now he had to do things because the fact that she wouldn't give in to him, he went and attacked her and stole the one thing that she wanted, which was her daughter.
Hmm. And fascinating. I think what's going to be interesting, I want to hear what people... I can't wait to see what people put in the comments and whatnot. I want to see how people feel about this over the course of a week.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason why that poem's in there, I'm sure. You know, there's a reason.
Wasn't picked out of randomness, that's for sure.
It was not. Grandpa is still critical. We know that. Dom is critical, but still alive. Just so you know. We found out the Townsend Directive has been reactivated, and now Red has found out a former associate in Montiamo Rostov, however you say it, is against Red and going to go after Katarina. Red gets the upper hand and ends up with a snitch by the end of the episode, and an operative in Frankie, and a dead illusionist. That's really what happened with Red this episode. Anything that Red went through stand out to you?
Yeah, the fact that he was like, is that Stroganoff? That was a nice throwback to season one.
Yeah,
with the Stroganoff scene. I was like, that's amazing. And the fact that I had Stroganoff for lunch today.
That sounds tasty.
It was very tasty.
Back to the episode.
I definitely used the nutmeg.
You need therapy. What about the episode? Did you get anything more from Red? Or are we just going to do like Meals on Wheels?
No, I think Red was just really looking for information on the Townsend Directive. And I think that what was nice about this scene was that it gave us the information that the Townsend Directive is actually a group of people that were all trying to find Katarina at one point and have now come together, but it almost seems like they're still working independently. So it's not as sophisticated as, say, a cabal would be, but they're more ruthless, it seems like, than what the cabal would have been.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good that he has a snitch now. So he has somebody that he can get information from. So he's kind of more level of playing field. And I can't imagine it's going to take long before he realizes Katarina moved in next door.
What was weird was the guy looked very similar to the guy from Paris.
I thought it was the same dude. I know, really, right? Did. Yeah, I did.
I was like, Katarina killed that guy. How's he still alive? That's amazing.
I'm like, he lived? Didn't she shoot him in the head? Or had a guy? No, she shot him in the face. I'm like, you can't be alive. You must have a twin brother or something. That's weird.
I'm so glad it wasn't just me.
Yeah, no, I legit thought it was the same guy. And I actually wondered if I am stupid and maybe he didn't die. I'm like, did I remember that wrong? Because damn. But no, yeah, he looked just like him.
Yep, but no, different guy.
All Russians look alike. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode. I don't really have much more to add. It was really, really fun. I love this episode.
Yeah, great start to the season so far. Really enjoying it.
And they blew up that dude in the bomb room.
Squishy.
So good. So good. All right. Wanted to take a quick second to say thank you to all of you who are supporting this show by going to Patreon. That's patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. But you know who needs our support even more right now? John Bokenkamp. See, he's given all of us this great show over the last 7 years, so we want to give back to him. And no, not directly to him. I'm sure he's doing fine financially. John runs this theater in his hometown in Nebraska called The World, and locals gather there every single week to watch The Blacklist. However, the theater needs some renovations done, its balcony and its HVAC system, so they need like $600,000 for the project and are just a bit shy of the goal. We can all help, though. Make that dream a reality if you'd like to.
we'd like to. So what we thought would be great is if we here, the Blacklist Exposed community, could help out. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to donate every single dollar raised in the month of October by going over to P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Any dollars this month in October are going to go directly to the efforts at the World Theater. Now, you're probably saying yourself, why should you donate to a theater in the middle of America, right? Especially if you're abroad. Well, every $50 donation that comes in this month will also net you a Blacklist Exposed t-shirt or coffee mug, and we will make you an official Task Force member. So definitely see if you can submit those $50 donations. It would be great. We'll also have links over on the website. So that's theblacklistexposed.com. That way, if you want to learn about the project itself, or if you want to contribute directly to the fund because you don't trust Aaron and I, because I definitely don't trust Aaron.
Hey.
Totally fine. But yeah, we'll definitely have a link to the project over on the website. I mean, I remember seeing E.T. as a kid in a small like classic theater like this in a small town, and movie houses all across America need to be preserved like this. So we definitely want to do what we can to help out. So again, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Every dollar in October that comes in is going to go straight to the world.
Yeah. And I want to be clear. I am an avid movie buff. I mean, I've got a whole podcast devoted to movies, and there's a reason why, because I love the theater experience. So to me, old classic theaters are very important. They are a sign of history. They are just something really special to me. I mean, I don't do it for me. I just do it because the preservation of theaters in general is getting harder and harder as times go on. And I think it's great that we're able to help in any ways we can. Again, that's patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Fill the Fandora. Help John and the world reach their goal to fix the balcony, get a new HVAC system. All proceeds, again, this month, go directly to those efforts. So thank you guys so much, and we'll be back with Red's Rhetoric right after this.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Aero Squad with Tammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
That's right. Did you hear that? I'm her favorite.
You do know I paid her to say that, right?
No one will ever know.
Anyways, this is Cammy, and if you love the TV show Arrow like we do, then come join us on Arrow Squad.
That's right, and this is The Flash, where each week we break down the episode and share listener feedback.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Hey, this is Amir. I play Aram on The Blacklist, and you are listening to The Blacklist Exposed.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we feature two of Red's scenes from the show, and then you get to vote, which is your favorite, over on the website. Just look for the post for Le Fleur de Mal over at theblacklistexposed.com, or click the online poll in your show notes on your favorite podcast player. Our first clip this week comes when Red pokes a man about his wife.
I'm sorry to barge in unexpectedly, but I've called repeatedly and there hasn't been hide nor hair of you, so I thought I'd come and check to see if you're okay.
Please don't.
And you're okay, thank God. I thought maybe Ed Broadfoot and his sons had finally tracked you down and dragged you off to one of those gravel pits.
What do you want?
It's about the Townsend Directive. I understand it's been reactivated, that you and everyone else who bought in are actively hunting for her.
Do you think I'm an idiot?
Matya, I need to take care of this myself. It's personal.
Do you know your conversations with the Minister of Finance single-handedly responsible for getting my operations pushed out of Kyiv? I lost millions on rail lines alone. I lost my relationship with contractors, politicians. My own wife left me for the competitor.
To be fair, she'd been screwing him for months.
Forget about the directive. Forget about Katerina Rostova. I'm not gonna help you find her. I'm gonna hunt her down, and I'm gonna kill her myself. The next time I see your face, I'm gonna shoot before you can start talking.
Too soon to comment about the wife.
Our second comes when Red calls to check in on Francesca.
You said the Peppermill didn't deliver the champagne?
They said there were no reservations under Farewell or Campbell.
Francesca said she was married, but according to Glenn, the DMV database lists her as single.
Hello?
When it's appropriate, I'd like to engage your services.
I thought we were even.
We are. You're under no obligation, but I could use a capable operative.
Do you need an answer right now?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, how rude of me. It's your anniversary. Did you make it to the pepper mill?
I did. We're here now.
And here I am talking shop. Go, have fun. I hope Paul knows how lucky he is.
How could he forget? I remind him every day.
Which was your favorite this week? If your actions interfere with another man's marriage, vote hashtag red wife. Or
wow.
you-
wow.
Or if you call to see if your friends are lying about their plans, vote hashtag red Frankie.
All right. Well, that was dramatic. Okay, so let's go to our special agent intel. Judy, my current working theory, not adamant about it, but thinking it works more and more. Dom maybe was the headmaster or equivalent at a Soviet school for children being groomed for becoming operatives, attended by Ilya Red, Katerina, and the Stranger. Just a thought. I think it would explain how they've all known each other so long. I don't think these people are related family-wise, except for Katerina and Dom. I mean,
it kind of ties in with maybe. That Independence USA episode from Redemption where they were training operatives. Yeah.
Yeah, that. And also, you know, there were, I think, well-known programs where Russians did that. So
Project Christmas and Alias. Yeah.
Probably possible, I guess. Yeah, it's not impossible. I wouldn't rule it out. That's for sure.
KB wrote in, said, to play devil's advocate, I don't believe Red owes Liz an explanation.
Oh, we're here again.
Katerina is the one.
Just back the car up.
Katerina is the one who owes Liz an explanation because everything that was done was at her request.
We don't know that.
Liz was raised by Sam to keep her safe at Katerina's request.
We don't know it was at her request.
Katerina was the reason Liz was in. Yes, we do.
Well, we know part of it, but she could have picked her up at any time. So something else had to have happened.
And because Katerina was the reason Liz was in danger, she couldn't go anywhere near her. But to ensure Liz's safety, fake Red was put in place to keep the cabal at bay. But Red's new criminal persona meant he also had to stay on the run. So he had to pay people to watch Liz for him after she became an adult and left home. And this is where Tom comes in. But Tom was paid to watch and not get close. He messed up, and that's why Red had to show himself and bring himself into the equation. By the way, I love you guys. I love listening to the banter. It makes the podcast even more entertaining. Been listening to you for years. Never wrote in. Now I'm writing in twice this week. Keep up the great work.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you for, writing in and tell us how wrong you are. So if I'm just
she loves the banter.
I'm just kidding. It's I don't know. I've got a lot of dings on this one because I'm not a fan of how he talked to Liz. Now this week he was fine with her and he was a lot of fun. He was very jovial. So maybe he's over it. I don't know.
Liz, focus. Steinhill, focus.
treat
right here.
Thankfully, I didn't get like a whole lot of her feeling tons of guilt over it this week. I was really worried like this was going to be something that carried over. And then what did I do? I didn't want that. And we didn't get it. So that was good.
That was good.
Yeah. Kevin wrote in and said, and thank you for the comments and the nice thoughts. That was really sweet. I was just kidding just a second ago. I make jokes. Don't take them personal. Except you, Troy. You take them as personal as you can.
I shall.
Pretty please. Kevin wrote in and said, we can only assume Belgrade is the same one we hear about in season 2, episode 9 and 10, Luther Braxton. Well, Kevin, we said that. Just letting you know. Is it possible that Dom orchestrated the operation and the goal was actually to kill Red? As he promised Katerina she would be safe, but Red got the better of Braxton. Afterwards, he used Red's reputation to blame him, much like Fitch did with the Kursk bombing.
Kursk.
I've heard it both ways. Just spitballing here off the cuff after watching the episode. So much information in this show, and that is why we all love it! Exclamation point. Before we move on, let's talk Belgrade. Did you rewatch that Luther Braxton episode?
I did, and it was interesting. So Braxton
what'd you come up with?
Basically tells Red, hey, I really liked hanging your boy Hinkle from a necktie. And so when you see at the end of the episode that Luther Braxton is hanging there like a side of beef in the director's office, that clearly tells you that Red took Hinkle's hanging personally.
Yep, true.
So who was Hinkle is now my question.
Ray Finkel?
Not Ray Finkle.
Laces were out.
Hinkle. Who is Hinkle, and how does he fit into this whole Dom, Katarina, Red, fake Red, Ilya, Hinkle?
You just hurt
Daniel
my head.
Hutton, Cooper, Sea Duke.
I don't know. I don't know. That's good. That's good insight. So, did you get anything else from those? Because you rewatched them.
No, just the fact that Luther Braxton was involved in it, but okay. The fact that Belgrade was Luther Braxton, which is tied to the memory wiping episode.
That's an important point, I think.
I mean, Luther Braxton didn't do the memory wiping specifically, but because Belgrade's mentioned in conjunction with a memory wiping episode, could be something that we should keep an eye on.
Keep paying attention. We got more stuff coming.
Sure, sure. Linda said, is it possible, probable, that the Townsend group is related to the third group whose territory was on that map in Red's apartment that we saw at the midpoint of season three? Do you think Mrs. What's-Her-Name down the hall is dead, or was she just gently relocated?
Oh, I think she's dead.
All right.
I hope she's relocated, because why kill an innocent woman? She didn't do anything.
Right, right. And to close it up, Sean Munoz said, to be honest, to help me enjoy the show more, I just stopped theorizing altogether, and I'm just enjoying everything that I see. It's too hard to think and try to mold what's going on in the future, so I just take with the show as given already and try not to look too much at what it could be, and it's a lot more fun that way. Honestly, the show is good to me not knowing who Reddington really is for a while. I enjoy the mystery of it all, but I have no idea who he is, but I don't try to guess anymore because it's too complicated. Obviously, we're going to get an answer one day, but for now, it's just fun having pieces leading up to it, because when the show is over, it's going to be sad, and there'll be no more fun.
Sean, that might be the most rational, reasonable, and accurate message we've ever gotten. That probably would make the show better for everybody. But then why would you listen to the podcast? That's half of what we do. So, you know, we got to keep going with it. We're just going to find new stuff. And by the way, I heard people complaining that we mentioned, like, there are people that get mad when you mention Red Arena or you mention the double switch. Even if you're saying you don't agree with it, they still got upset about it.
Yeah, that one was interesting. They got mad that we said double switch, even though we went, the double switch is stupid.
Yeah, I don't quite. Okay. Okay. You can't make everybody happy. You just can't. But you keep trying, you know? And hopefully somebody, I'm really hoping somebody has like a swear jar, and every time it's mentioned, they throw a quarter in. And I'm hoping we can get to about $1 million before the end of this series by mentioning Red Arena and the double switch. Now I'm going to add that to the list. And if you don't know what the double switch is, you don't want to. I promise you, you just don't.
There's a camp brewing. I saw a couple threads this week.
It'll be a Facebook group before the end of the year, man. I can guarantee it. It'll be like 5,000 members.
Bravo.
And yeah, but don't include me. Don't add me to that group. I don't want to be part of it. I don't want any part of that. All right. Well, that's going to conclude this episode. 6 seasons are on Netflix. Please be sure to check that out if you haven't. Now is the time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, your neighbor. And when you do, please also recommend that they listen and subscribe to The Blacklist Exposed podcast. All the case files can be found at theblacklistexposed.com and everywhere. Great and even better than average podcasts can be found.
And for more great Aaron and Troy hijinks, follow us on your favorite social media outlet. I'm at Troy Heinrichs. He's at Aaron Smirks. And together we are at The Blacklist GSM. Talk about the show, the podcast, or share pictures from your last secret event party.
Yes. And my name is spelled A-A-R-O-N. Somebody wrote me a message and spelled it E-R-I-N. That's wrong. I'm just letting you know. That's wrong.
And my name is Troy, T-R-O-Y, not Tony. There's no N in my name.
Somebody call you Tony?
Everybody calls me Tony.
That's a better name. We should just start calling you Tony.
Especially when my email is...
Hey, Tony!
When my email has Troy in the email, and then it says Tony as the first word. It's like, you can't look right above there?
That's like an Italian name. It's got like power. I just want to talk to you like Fonzie now.
You know it.
Hey, Tony, how you doing?
Hey, 2 Milwaukee references in one night. Hey.
Hey, big thanks for listening, guys. Yeah, but don't forget to answer our profiling question, all right? Can you trust Francesca? You trust Frankie? I don't know.
I don't know, but next week, I think we can tell him. Can we tell him?
Well, I don't know what we're going to tell. What are we going to tell him?
We're going to tell him what the episode next week is about, because it's on your TV guide already.
Oh, what's it about? Oh, we know the name. We know the title, right?
The title.
Is
Kuwait.
So we finally are going to know what happened in Kuwait.
Do you hope we meet Daniel Hutton? Do you hope we meet Sea Duke?
Yes!
Are you excited to see young Harold Cooper?
I want to know who's going to play young Red Reddington.
Maybe young Red Reddington is Daniel Hutton.
Oh, crap. That was my mind.
Next week, everybody, don't miss it.
Take care, guys.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
And don't forget, Aram is kind of a player and a pimp and a home wrecker.
Her fault. Her fault.
It's not her fault. It's their fault. It's two people. Two people. You know whose fault it's not? Meals on Wheels. That's who.